I want you to imagine just for a second that you're moving to a new home. Like, what is the very first thing your mind jumps to?
Oh, the boxes. Definitely the boxes.
Right. If you're anything like me, it's the sheer exhausting mechanical logistics of it all. It's
Oh.
the endless towering stacks of cardboard boxes just completely taking over your living room. And that awful screeching sound of the packing
I
tape.
can hear it in my head right now.
It's the worst. And, discovering those layers of dust you never knew existed behind the sofa. And just feeling this creeping, heavy anxiety of trying to cram your entire life into a ridiculously small rented truck.
Yeah, because we tend to view moving as this purely transactional transition, right? Just getting from point A to point B.
Exactly. You take an object, you wrap it in bubble wrap, put it in the back, slam the door shut, and just pray nothing fragile shatters when you hit a pothole.
Because it's entirely focused on the material inventory. I mean, we obsess over whether the couch will fit through the door or if the dishes are packed tight enough.
Oh, absolutely.
But we completely ignore the invisible cargo that we are actually hauling. Like the memories, the shifts in identity, the emotional baggage, all of that is traveling right there in the back of the truck alongside your kitchen appliances.
Which is actually the perfect jumping-off point for today's deep dive. Because our mission today is to completely upend that strictly logistical, exhausting view of moving.
It's a total perspective shift.
It really is.
Yeah.
We are unpacking this concept, or prostio, as it's called in Spanish, and we're going to look at it not as a physical chore, but as the profound visual representation of transporting one's entire identity.
And to get there, we're looking at a highly detailed visual and technical analysis of the cover artwork for a newly released book on Amazon.
Right.
The book is titled Trostio, and it's conceived, illustrated, and written by the artist Ira Duque.
And the cover itself is just this stunning watercolor of a massive cargo truck painted in February 2025 out in California.
It's a gorgeous piece.
Yeah, so we're going to explore how that single image somehow manages to encapsulate like over a decade of memories, cosmic consciousness, and historical resistance. And ultimately, how exploring this artwork might completely redefine the way you look at your own life transitions.
Yeah, it's deep.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to really understand the heavy symbolic cargo of this painting, we first need to figure out whose hands are actually steering the wheel, right?
The artist himself.
Right, because Jairo Duque's entry into the art world is, well, it's far from the typical trajectory you usually hear about.
Oh yeah, he is definitely not a childhood prodigy who was, aggressively groomed for high-end gallery spaces from the age of five.
What at all?
His intense daily relationship with painting emerged much later in life. Like it didn't truly take force until around the year 2016.
Wow.
Yeah, and that timeline fundamentally changes the DNA of the work he
Well,
produces.
yeah, coming to your craft at a mature age entirely shifts your motivation, I'd imagine. I
Yeah.
mean, he wasn't doing this to please a strict academic institution,
Exactly.
and he wasn't trying to impress an art critic to get a passing grade.
No, painting became a profound existential necessity for him. It functioned as a vital tool to just sustain the transit of his own existence.
That's a powerful way to put it.
And when someone comes to art with that kind of sheer survival level urgency, they develop a radically different philosophy from what you see in the mainstream contemporary art market. A major part of that philosophy is a complete, unapologetic rejection of the modern obsession with having a uniform, recognizable visual style.
See, that stood out to me so much. Because today, the art world basically demands that you create a recognizable brand for Instagram, you know?
Oh, 100%.
Like if you paint blue squares, you better keep painting blue squares so people know it's you. It's like being forced to wear a rigid corporate uniform every single day just so no one in the office confuses your brand with someone else's.
And here is an artist who says, no, I'm going to dress based entirely on how I feel this morning.
Yes, he jumps from watercolor to acrylic over to digital art.
Yeah, he doesn't even organize his book into rigid, predictable chapters. He groups his work organically into what he calls thematic constellations.
Right, moving from themes of nature to urban painting to surrealism and then right into social protest.
It's a deliberate prioritization of expressive freedom over commercial uniformity. He's just refusing to be packaged.
But I have to push back here for a second. Doesn't constantly changing mediums, like using watercolor one day, digital art the next, jumping from painting trees to painting anti-war protests,
yeah.
doesn't lacking a homogeneous aesthetic run a massive risk?
How do you mean?
Well, I feel like the work could end up feeling really scattered, like it lacks a real core identity.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it all laid out on a table, how do you even know it's the same artist?
You know, that is a completely fair critique, and it's actually a risk Duke addresses directly by redefining what identity actually means in his work.
Okay, how so?
He argues that diversity is not dispersion. Think about it this way. To reduce the vast, complex, beautifully chaotic human experience to a single visual palette, or like a single repeatable brushstroke, would be fundamentally dishonest.
Oh, wow. So forcing a single style just to be marketable is actually the fake part.
Exactly. Life does not have just one filter, so why should his art? The true identity of his work doesn't lie in a visual technique you can easily copy. It lies in its ethics.
Its ethics.
Yeah, it's about capturing genuine human moments without solemn, pretentious poses. The unity of his work is ethical, not technical.
Okay, I see.
There are these unbreakable narrative threads tying all those different constellations together, whether it's a commitment to protecting nature, treating everyday beauty as an act of resistance, or maintaining a very clear vocal stance against violence and war.
So the aesthetic changes,
yeah,
but the moral compass remains fixed.
Spot on.
So if the glue holding this all together isn't visual, it has to be deeply conceptual. And he uses a very specific structural framework to keep all of these different mediums and themes perfectly balanced, right?
Yes. He refers to this framework as triangulation.
Right, triangulation.
The triangulation system is essentially his creative constitution. He believes every single piece of art must balance three distinct elements to be valid.
Okay.
The first vertex of the triangle is the body. This is the purely physical and technical dimension of the art.
So the materials.
Exactly. It's the chemistry of the industrial pigments, specific weight of the cold pressed paper, the literal tangible materials used to drag an idea into the physical world.
So if we think of this like music, the body is the wooden instrument itself, right? The tension of the strings, the horsehair on the bow, the physical object that is capable of making the sound.
That analogy works perfectly. So once you have the instrument, you need the second vertex, which is the emotion.
The emotion.
This is the intangible energy emanating from the image. It's the specific vibe or atmosphere designed to provoke an organic, visceral reaction from you, the viewer, when you stand in front of it.
So keeping with the music analogy,
yeah,
the emotion is the actual melody vibrating in the air that makes someone in the back of the auditorium burst into tears. It's the invisible feeling.
Yes. But you still need a third vertex to complete the triangle, right?
Yeah.
To give that emotion purpose.
Right.
And this is the conceptual spirit. It is the underlying intention, the deep philosophical idea that sustains the work and gives it a reason to exist in the first place.
Wow.
And here is where the physical book Trestio takes on a very special role. The physical book published on Amazon is not just a promotional catalog or a bonus item to sell paintings.
It's not just merch.
No. The book itself is the conceptual spirit materialized. It functions as the third vertex for his entire body of work.
It's the original sheet music, the underlying intention that gives the melody its specific direction and meaning.
That's exactly it.
But, you know, as I was looking into how he constructed this sheet music, I hit a massive wall. I am really struggling with a glaring contradiction here.
You're bumping up against the technological paradox in his process.
Yes. Okay. Let's lay this out.
Yeah.
Because on one hand, this artist is fiercely dedicated to documenting his incredibly tactile human process. He shares his painting phases on TikTok at the handle JDukeArt.
Yeah.
He meticulously credits the original photographers when he uses reference images from the web. He's entirely obsessed with the honest, organic, flawed human experience. And he flees commercialism for raw authenticity.
Very true.
But then it is explicitly stated that he uses artificial intelligence as a support tool to write the text of his book.
Yeah.
How can someone so grounded in organic humanity use an algorithm to write the manifesto of his soul?
It absolutely feels jarring at first glance. I mean, we have been conditioned to view AI as something that inherently replaces the human voice, something that flattens creativity.
Right, a shortcut.
But if we plug this back into his triangulation system, the logic becomes clear. He views AI exactly the same way he views a manufactured tube of primary blue paint.
Wait, hold on. I can't let that slide. Because a tube of paint doesn't write your manifesto for you.
Sure it doesn't.
Paint doesn't have a voice.
Yeah.
Paint doesn't make decisions about syntax or philosophy. AI does. So how is a generative language model the same thing as a tube of acrylic blue?
Because of how he restricts its agency.
Wow.
Let's look at the body of the painting again. He uses industrially manufactured pigments, literal chemistry created in a lab by machines, to express his deeply personal human emotion on the canvas.
Okay, true.
He doesn't go out and mine the lapis lazuli himself, right? He uses the lab-created paint as a vehicle. And he uses AI in the exact same way for his writing.
How so?
He doesn't just type, write a book about my art and go to sleep. He provides the raw essence, the core motivations, the jagged, unpolished human ideas. Then he uses the AI merely to help construct the grammatical scaffolding.
Oh, I see. So he's using it more like a highly advanced sparring partner.
It's an iterative tool. He prompts the AI structures, and then he tears it down and rewrites it. He refines constantly, over and over, until the text perfectly aligns with his true human voice.
So he's still doing the heavy lifting.
He refuses to delegate the actual intention. The hand guiding the steering wheel of that text remains 100% human. The AI is just the power steering, making the physical turning a bit easier.
Okay, that definitely shifts the perspective. It's not a ghostwriter, it's just a digital paintbrush for words.
Exactly.
And all of this underlying philosophy, the late blooming urgency, the ethical identity, the musical triangulation of body, emotion, and concept, it all culminates visually on the cover of the book itself.
Yeah, the watercolor cover is where that invisible conceptual spirit finally takes a physical shape you can actually see and dissect. And I have to say, from a purely technical standpoint, it is a staggering piece of work.
Let's paint this picture for you listening, because it is vivid. This piece was painted on cold-pressed Arches watercolor paper.
Yeah.
And what you see is this massive, heavy, industrial cargo truck.
Just
right. And it is driving on a highway where the asphalt is visibly, undeniably slick and wet. It's moving toward this incredibly warm, radiant sunset on the horizon.
It's beautiful.
But right above that sunset, looming over the entire scene, is the spectacular spiritual immensity of the Milky Way galaxy. The contrast is incredibly heavy. You have this mundane industrial machine grinding its tires on wet earth, sitting right beneath the unfathomable cosmic scale of the universe.
And every single brushstroke in that composition is loaded with meaning. Like, let's look at that wet road. The reflections in the slick asphalt are not just a weather choice. They act as a metaphor for the present moment.
Oh, wow.
Think about wet ground. It is slippery. It is inherently unstable. It's a territory you are forced to traverse, but you absolutely cannot possess it, and you certainly cannot stop and build a foundation on it.
Yeah, you can't park on a slippery present. It forces you to keep moving.
And that deeply unstable, slippery ground contrasts sharply with the starry sky above it. The Milky Way represents cosmic consciousness.
Right.
It is a humbling visual reminder that the human being driving that truck, along with all of their carefully packed belongings and massive life anxieties, is just a tiny microscopic particle moving against the vastness of the cosmos.
So here's where it gets really interesting, though. The whole composition is built on a dominant diagonal line. But typically, in like advertising or standard photography, if you want to show a powerful, massive vehicle, you shoot it driving toward you.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Coming straight at the camera to show dominance, force, and arrival. But Duke deliberately paints this truck driving away from us, giving us its back doors. Why make that specific spatial decision?
Because that spatial decision changes your relationship with the artwork entirely. Think about it. If the truck were coming forward, it would feel like an arrival.
Right.
It would be an imminent invasion, a confrontation with you, the viewer. By having the truck drive away, the artist is physically guiding your eye and forcing you to accompany the transit.
Oh, that makes sense.
Your gaze has no choice but to follow the truck toward that distant horizon. It's a horizon where the warmth of the sunset and the cold of the starry night coexist. He doesn't want you to be a bystander witnessing an arrival. He forces you to participate in the journey.
And the physical execution of that journey in watercolor is just wild. The mechanics of it mirror the philosophy completely. Because he builds the painting in architectural layers. But for the sky and that slippery, wet terrain, he uses transparent washes where water, not the pigment, but the water itself, dictates what happens.
And working wet on wet with watercolor is an immense physical risk because cold pressed paper has a rough texture, a literal tooth to it.
Right.
When you lay down heavy water, it pools in the valleys of the paper. You lose absolute control. You get unpredictable blooms, jagged marks, and textures that you just cannot entirely plan for or dictate.
Which would terrify most artists trying to maintain a perfect, pristine brand.
Completely.
Yeah.
But it perfectly embodies his philosophy.
Yeah.
He doesn't try to rigidly correct those unpredictable watermarks. He accepts the spontaneity and the unruliness of the water as the honest truth of the painting.
Wow.
He lets his rigid human technique step aside and allows the pure language of the physical material to speak. The water is allowed to have its own voice.
Pure, uncontrolled honesty, just like his rejection of the corporate art uniform we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
So we have this massive industrial vehicle. We have the slippery, unpossessable present it drives on. And we have the humbling, eternal cosmos above it.
Yes.
But a truck driving into a sunset is just a truck. Unless we look at what gives this perpetual human transit its actual meaning. Like, what is the truck carrying?
This is honestly the most striking detail of the entire piece. The back doors of this moving truck are thrown wide open. And when you look inside the cargo hold, you don't see cardboard boxes wrapped in tape.
No.
You don't see a dining room table or old floor lamps. The truck is carrying canvases. It is transporting art.
The message there is so brilliant. When we move forward in life, when we transition to a new phase, we don't just abandon the past in an empty apartment. We carefully, deliberately transport it with us.
We do. And there is one specific prominent canvas sitting inside that truck that we have to talk about. It's a painting titled Contra Cultura, or Counterculture.
I need you to describe that canvas because the visual is so jarring compared to the rest of the serene landscape.
It really is. Inside the dark cargo hold of the truck, this canvas features a striking, vivid blue face. But the composition of the face is completely dominated by one giant imposing eye.
It's so intense.
And the positioning is crucial here.
Yeah.
While the truck itself is moving forward, driving away from us toward the future light of the sunset, this giant eye inside the canvas is looking backward.
Looking backward.
Yes, it is staring right back at the viewer, and symbolically, it is staring right back at history.
I absolutely love this. It's like the giant eye in the back of the truck acts as a moral rearview mirror for society. It has to keep looking backward to ensure we don't crash into the exact same historical mistakes as we accelerate blindly into the future.
That is a brilliant way to frame it. That eye represents historical consciousness. Within Duke's thematic constellations, he uses this specific element to document youth resistance, social struggles, and intense critiques of war.
That's amazing.
It represents the heavy weight of historical memory that simply cannot be left behind on the side of the road. You have to carry the knowledge of past struggles with you to make the new destination mean anything.
So when we pull all of these separate symbolic elements together into one single frame, it just operates on a staggering number of levels.
It really does. You have the truck itself, which acts as the physical body transporting human culture. You have the wet, slippery road representing the fleeting, unstable present moment we all have to navigate. You have the immense starry sky acting as the cosmic consciousness reminding us of our tiny scale. And then you have that bold blue eye in the back acting as the non-negotiable emblem of historical memory. All of this complex philosophy is happening at once in a single fluid watercolor.
So what does this all mean for you listening right now? We started this deep dive by talking about the purely physical, exhausting logistics of packing up cardboard boxes to move from one apartment to another.
Yeah, the tape, the dust.
Right. We think of it as just relocating our stuff. But what Trastio shows us is that art isn't just a commodity you buy online to decorate a wall. And moving isn't just about changing your zip code.
Not at all.
Life itself is a perpetual act of relocation. When you go through major transitions and changes in your own life, like changing careers, ending relationships, moving to a new city, you aren't just managing a logistical chore. You are actively transporting your identity, your history, your past struggles, and your defining memories.
Because the past isn't something you leave swept up in the dust of an empty room. It is the vital cargo you carefully load into the truck to bring into your new horizon. It informs who you will be when you finally unpack.
The ideas we've explored today ask us to consider what specific personal memory or what piece of our own historical art we're choosing to carry in the back of our own truck. But I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over today, something that builds on this incredible artwork.
Okay, let's hear it.
Think about this. If that giant eye in the back of the truck is busy watching our past to keep us safe, and the wet asphalt of the present is entirely unpossessable, slippery, and out of our control, who or what is actually steering the truck?
Oh, wow.
We always assume we are firmly in the driver's seat of our own life transitions, gripping the wheel. But perhaps we are merely the caretakers of the cargo in the back, while the cosmos dictates the road ahead.
it completely reframes how we view control. Like, are we the drivers of our destiny or just the guardians of the memories we take with us on the ride?
Definitely something to think about the next time you find yourself taping up a cardboard box and wondering where it all goes. Thank you so much for joining us on this journey today. Keep your curiosity ignited. Keep questioning the invisible cargo you carry, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.